Terry Griffith Show is underway on Valentine's Day, Friday, February 14th. I didn't plan anything romantic as far as the topic goes today, but we're going to talk about the heartwarming love that firefighters have for us all every day when they save our lives. Today is the day that the Quincy Fire Department sends somebody, and today, woo, in his white administrative uniform, freshly promoted, is the new Deputy Chief of Administration, Damon Dade, for the Quincy Fire Department. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
So how long have you been on the force?
This is starting my 21st year service with the Quincy Fire Department.
21st year. Started out as just a regular guy riding the truck.
Yes, ma'am.
Did you aspire to be in administration, or did you not even think about that? You probably just aspired to get through your first week.
Yeah, just getting through Firefighter Academy is the first thing that's on anybody's mind. So, no, this isn't where I thought that I would, you know, initially, this isn't where I was trying to get to. But it's just a natural progression as guys retire, people move up, it just becomes a natural progression in your career.
Okay, so you definitely have eyes on the prize now.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, fantastic. Damon Dade is also in charge of training for the Quincy Fire Department, and that's what we're going to focus on today. Before we get to the training, I know I saw one of your firefighters on the news this morning on television talking about how on a bitterly cold day like yesterday and today, this is a time when fires can start because people are using space heaters, they've got their electric blankets on, they are doing maybe heat, trying to turn the oven on to add extra heat to the house. Plus, outside, our heating units may get covered over with snow and ice, and they're not able to vent. So before we get into training, let's train our listeners how to be safe when it's bitterly cold like this.
Well, the first thing is, you know, like they said, there was a news, the guys with the heating and air, they covered that topic. You know, that's the first thing is making sure your heating units are working properly. And then making sure that you take the proper precautions and steps if you're going to use space heaters and things. Make sure you're going by the guidelines for the appliance that you're using. That's the most important thing, keeping the spacing away from covers and couches and furniture and things like that. We just sometimes we get those things close because we want to be comfortable, but we also have to be safe.
And so often it can inadvertently happen. You fall asleep and you've got a blanket on and all of a sudden you toss and turn and your blanket hits the space heater. Or the kitty cat has a ball of yarn.
Yeah, and then another thing people don't realize is everybody thinks there has to be flame impingement. They don't understand about heat dynamics and how they spread and heat radiates. And a lot of times people think that, you know, if there's no flame impingement that something doesn't get hot enough to catch on fire, and it's simply not true.
So it doesn't have to be a flame to catch something on fire.
No,
anybody
doesn't.
That has an electric stove ought to know that.
Exactly.
That's right. Things can get hot and they will ignite. So let's talk a little bit about training. The Quincy firefighters, I guess on an ideal day, you would be at the firehouse and never get called out. Everybody's safe. Nobody's starting a fire. There's no traffic accident you have to rush to with the jaws of life. That would be the ideal day. That's not a very normal day, but that'd be the ideal day. But a lot of people have an old-time idea that the guys just sit around the fire station, play cards, and eat chili all day and don't do anything unless there's a fire. But you're constantly busy doing things, and it's sometimes hard to get a training session in because you never know when it's going to be interrupted by the real deal.
Exactly. Ben Franklin, believe it or not, was one of the first firefighters in the country. And, you know, he coined the expression, ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and also that well done is better than well said. So with that, you have to understand that for the fire department, performance is our measuring stick. When the public calls 911, they expect us to be able to show up and mitigate any situation that they call for. In order to do that, our guys have to continually keep up on their education, skills performance, and physical fitness. In doing that, it's not just the fire calls that we respond to. We respond to EMS, technical rescue teams as far as hazmat, confined space, trench rescue, structural collapse, rope rescue, water response, pipeline, railway emergencies. So when you start thinking about that, other professions get to train daily on the things that they do. For the fire department, sometimes, you know, with the climate of budgets being cut and things like that, we can't underestimate the value of the training of our firefighters. You know, we still have to be able to go in. We can't. It's not safe or practical for us to train on fires every single day. So we have to continue our training because we have recommendations that guide training. We have standards that guide training, and we have mandates that guide training too. So with all those things, we can't get away from the basics because we have to be able to train as we respond, and we have to be able to train in all those different competencies that we are called to respond to.
Let's talk about one thing that has changed. A year and a half ago, they announced that we're going to have jets come into Quincy, Baldwin Field, and there were going to be like 70 passengers.
Yeah.
And now we're back to Cape airplanes that are much smaller. You had to train on small Cape airplanes, and then you probably had to get familiar with that jet that flew into Quincy. And talk a little bit about what the Quincy Fire Department's responsibility is at Baldwin Field.
Okay, the FAA, like I said, there's mandates on how we have to respond. We were out there responding because if there's a certain number of passengers on a plane, we have to be out there and provide firefighters have to be on scene when those planes land and when those planes take off. They've got to be there 15 minutes prior and 15 minutes after they depart. Going with those smaller airplanes allows us to not have to have firefighters in the station when they're out there. We still have to keep our certification up so that we can respond out to the airport. We just don't have to be in-house out there with the smaller airplanes in the service.
That was very costly for the Quincy Fire Department when we had the big jets. I mean, because you had to have – it's not like that's just standing outside Central Station. I mean, you had to physically send a crew out there.
Yes.
But it was only a couple times a day, but still, it wasn't as many times a day. But, I mean, these are costs and things that I don't think the average person thinks about. Because while you're out there, if a fire breaks out in downtown Quincy, you're out there. Somebody has to be here.
Well, most of the time, we have additional crews. So,
well, right.
Yeah, there's an expense of having overtime because we have to man that station. That station is not manned 100% of the time, only when those flights are coming in. Like I said, 15 minutes prior to and after they depart. So we still have coverage within the city. But there are times if we can't cover those shifts that we would have to send a crew outside the city limits. And like you said, that does affect the service that we can provide to the citizens of Quincy here. But once again, those things are made because of budget cuts and restrictions and things like that. So if we want to make sure that we have that coverage in the city as far and as well as out there at the airport, those are budgetary issues that the public would have to decide, you know, if that's important to them. Those are things that have to be added into our budget instead of cut out of the budget.
But that is not required at the moment because of Cape Air.
It's not required right at the moment because of the airplane service that's here.
Deputy Chief of Administration Damon Dade is here to talk about the training for the Quincy Fire Department. We started at the airport. Let's go down to the river.
All right. You know,
you guys ride around in big, shiny red trucks, but you got some scuba gear with you all the time, too, I guess. So talk a little bit about the fact that, like you said, people expect you to show up anytime, anywhere, for anything. You guys are the multi-purpose tool in that early responders box. How much training do you get on water rescue?
We train on water rescue during the warmer months. We also, because of our area, like a lot of places, sometimes to provide the coverage for the entire area, fire departments have to rely on each other. Quincy Fire Department and Tri-Township Fire Department have a mutual aid agreement, which we respond within 5 miles of their response district as well to help them out. They also, right now, have the dive team capabilities on their department. We gave that up, and so now we still have water response. We go out and we train on the river in case there's water emergencies. There's other agencies that can also respond, Department of Natural Resources,
Conservation. Yeah.
Those guys can come, too. They're just not as readily available to respond as we are.
But when a call like that comes in, this is why dispatch and everything and mutual aid is so important, because everybody's going to start racing to the scene. But right now, the very specialized scuba dive team happens to be a tri-township, and they don't care where it is. They're going to call those guys in.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that's the one thing about firefighting. You have to understand to the average person, you know, if I don't live in Quincy, I still may have a Quincy firefighter respond to my scene, because if there's loss of life possible,
yes,
you guys don't get to the city limits and stop and say, ain't our problem.
No, and that's the thing. Most people, if you were to ask who provides their protection, they probably couldn't really tell you. You know, unless they live right next to a fire station, they know that that crew's coming. But other than that, the city boundary lines are always moving, and people are being annexed in and out, and so they used to be city, now it's, you know, county and things like that. And when they call 911, nobody really cares. They just want somebody to show up and take care of the situation.
Yeah, just come. Yeah. Just come and send the truck. We're talking about training for firefighters, and you, what are your guys out there waiting for you?
Yeah, somebody.
Somebody.
I don't know who's pulling up.
Somebody's in trouble or somebody needs help. So we've talked about airport. We've talked about the water. Let's talk about maybe more normal things. And you have a training center out at 18th and Seminary Road, between,
yes,
Cooks Lane and Seminary Road. And so you're able to do some things out there where you can actually start things on fire.
Yes.
And crawl around and put on your equipment and practice.
Yes, ma'am.
And figure things out. You even have a mock airplane out there. You've,
yes,
got a tall tower. You've probably got a whole bunch of stuff out there. So talk about, you know, explain to the layman, how do I train for a firefighting situation? Because I imagine there's like roof collapse or, mm-hmm, floor collapse, or my buddy's trapped, or,
yes,
there's,
ma'am,
a child in a room. So go through some of these scenarios and talk about these training situations.
Okay. You know, there's a book out. It's called It's Your Ship. It was written by Captain Michael Abershaw. And one of the things he talked about when he took over that ship, I think it was the USS Benfold, is that he wanted to make sure that his crew was combat ready. And that's what we have to do all the time. We have to make sure that we're combat ready. With that, that training facility is a very invaluable resource for us. It's a regional training facility. There were only 10 built around the entire state. There are only 6 that are still active, and Quincy's happens to be one of the top 3 that are active in the state of Illinois. So with that facility, we have a burn room out there, so we can go in, we can simulate fire, we can pull our hoses, we can do high-rise situations out there, we can do all of our high- and low-angle rescue. So it provides us with the ability to go in, do our two-in, two-out, which is, like you were saying, if we have a situation go down with one of us, how do we save our own? So we get to practice invaluable skills at that facility, and it's always being utilized. We also have classrooms out there, too. So
a lot of the volunteer fire departments,
yes,
use that for help to train, too.
Yes.
And how critical is a professional firefighting department like Quincy in an area where there are a lot of volunteer fire departments? Do those volunteers look to you to kind of be the lead dog?
Yes, they do. They look in. Now, a lot of those places are starting to develop their own facilities as well, because anytime you have to travel or go away, you know, that's added expense and cost to departments. But the volunteers do what we do for their communities for free. They don't have the time that we do to train. And so a lot of times these guys are, they're going to their 9-to-5 job, and then they have family functions and everything else, and so a lot of times the only time they get to train is on the weekends. And so to get to come in and train with professional fire departments is something that they look forward to, because once again, when 911 is dialed, people don't understand that they're volunteers, that they're not being paid. All they understand is the red truck's coming, and they expect the same level of professionalism from volunteers as they do professional firefighters. So the only difference between a professional and a volunteer is how much they get paid. But the commitment to excellence to do their job, the compassion to help the community is all still there. It's all the same thing, and the expectation doesn't fall just because they're volunteer level.
You're on duty 7 days a week at the Quincy Fire Department, and, of course, people have rotating shifts. Some people, like you get that white shirt on. You get to work probably 8-to-5 or whatever.
There's a few perks with
it,
yes.
You got it easy now, DeMond, Dave. But training goes on Saturday and Sunday, too. And anytime there are people at the fire station on duty, punched in the clock, being paid by the city of Quincy,
mm-hmm,
they are not playing cards and eating chili. They are They are working. They are ready to work at all times. And some training, whether it be perhaps reading materials or if it's physical, you mentioned to be physically fit.
Yes.
Now, years ago, I knew some firefighters. It's like, those are some big old boys.
They
were not
physically
fit to do much of anything. It's very difficult physically to become a firefighter. I took the test one time. Oh, I was terrible. News report.
Out of curiosity.
I was young.
Yeah.
It was 40 years ago. I'm like, how hard could it be? Oh, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, I was an epic fail. But is there a standard that you have to reach, or once you make it, you make it?
It depends on where you are. Once you make it, you make it. But it depends on your department. Some of the times when you see the firefighter calendars, the most fit guys you see, some of the departments out west even have body fat percentages that they have to maintain to even keep their job. So it just depends on what your department, how it's set up. But for the most part, most guys are the consummate professionals. At any time, you go to any one of our stations, and you'll find guys either working out physically, sometimes in their gear, because like I said, we have to train how we're going to respond. And even just working out regular sometimes doesn't get it. You have to put your gear on, put an air pack on, go up and down stairs, create your own situations. Just like a sports team would do, we have to prepare in that manner. And a lot of times back in the older times when fitness wasn't seen to be as valuable as it is now, people understand that we've gone from cardiovascular diseases being the leading killer of firefighters to now cancers are being the leading killer of firefighters. So on top of just training, the awareness of understanding how we properly clean our gear, come back and clean our trucks, our stations, and how we handle all those things all go into our training. So I don't want to allude to the fact that for 24 hours a day our guys are training, but there's
right.
a big portion of the day that's committed to training, maintenance of the vehicles, and preparing, to respond.
Well, you're
calls.
Out with some very toxic chemicals. Those fumes are putting off toxic chemicals, so you have to clean all that gear and everything. That's all part of the job.
Yes.
So right now there really isn't a standard you have to meet. But let me ask you a question, because I'm going to drill this in. I'm going to get an answer from you. You're very good at evasion.
All right.
If I'm fat and unable to do the job, I'm not going to get promoted, probably. I mean, what's going to happen to me if I mean, I would imagine almost all of them now.
Yeah.
I look at the Quincy Fire Department. I don't see anybody like I used to see 40 years ago.
Yes, ma'am.
I just don't see that. But, somebody just decides, hey, it's chili dog day every day, and I don't care. And what will be the consequences of that besides their peer group saying, I don't want to be your partner because I don't think you can carry me out, and I know I can carry you out. But, what are the consequences? Are there consequences? Is it just failure to thrive, failure to move up, or can something really happen to you if you can't do the job?
Well, like I said, right now we don't have any
there's no
hard etched in stone standard that if you hit a certain weight or anything like that you're not going to be promoted or you can't do the job. We still test for promotions and things like that. So as long as you perform well, it doesn't really matter. What it matters though is the perception of the public, the perception of yourself, your peers, like you said. And then it's also a public perception. I can tell you this, like after 9/11, fire departments all across the country kind of shut the doors, from a protection standpoint. And so we were kind of out of sight, out of mind, so it used to be, a lot more open doors, public can see and those type of things. And it depends on what the public perception is, to see the guys working out and different things like that. Most people in the public look at that and say, wow, look at that. Those are our firefighters. They're in shape. They're preparing themselves, and they see that. Sometimes it has the opposite effect, just like sitting around and playing cards and that. Sometimes people see that, and, they will think, well, they're just working out, and they're getting paid to work out. But that is true. Outside
you
of actually,
hose,
yes, outside of actually responding to fire calls, preparing to respond to calls is what the public pays us for. So, yes, you will see the guys working out, and as long as that mindset in the public is carried out to understand that we're blue-collar workers too, we have to be prepared, and that preparation takes on all forms.
Okay. Damond, I wish we had more time. You must come back.
Oh, I'll come back.
I think the training aspect of it is the part that the people least understand because
yes,
they see the you know, they understand, you know, you shoot water on a fire.
Yeah.
But I don't think they fully understand that the average firefighter, every single day when you're at work, there is something you are doing to promote
yes.
fire safety. And part of that is keeping yourself ready. And
yes,
like
ma'am.
I said, anyone who, if you can't imagine how difficult this test is physically. I mean, you have to put on all this heavy equipment and put this hose on your back and climb up this ladder. And it's just, it's almost physically impossible, you know, and nobody off the street could do it. So even taking the test, you know, people are preparing for 6 months to take the test,
oh, yeah.
you know, so these guys are in shape. And so, and I think a calendar would be a good idea. Tell Henning I said, I want to see Joe. Joe could eat. I know he's shy. He can be February. Doesn't have any pressure on him, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So we want to see a Quincy Fire Department calendar.
Well, we can't put him on February now. That's Black History Month. That's, you know.
You want to be on February?
Yeah, he can't
okay.
take February from
well,
me.
Well, okay. You're in shape for it, Damond. Now, don't let this cushy white shirt job get you all pudgy, okay?
Oh, never
Stay
never
in there.
That. Never
Stay
that.
In there. If you're a training officer, I guess you have to lead by example,
yes,
right?
Yes, ma'am. Exactly.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, this queen bee is going to talk to a bunch of beekeepers about keeping bees. And we will be right back. It's 9:41. It's like sugar to a bee, as Mr. James Taylor would say. We're changing gears. We're going from fire safety to bee safety. How to be safe around bees and be a beekeeper. And we're joined today by the president of the Mississippi Valley Beekeepers Association, Bruce Macknig, and by newbie beekeeper, Josh Ingram. And there is a class tomorrow to teach people, kind of, how to become a beekeeper. I don't think you learn it all in one day, in 8 hours. Get that microphone right up to your mouth there, Mr. Bruce Macknig, and tell us about this class. What are we going to learn if we invest 8 hours of our time tomorrow about beekeeping?
So this is a beginner beekeeping course. You learn the basics of the bee physiology, the hive and how the hive works, the different classes of bees in there, the queens, the workers, and the drones, and how to set up a hive and how to take care of it.
Okay. So the very basics. Now,
yes.
Josh, did you go through this class?
Yes, last year. That's
and
how I got started.
That's how you got started.
I wanted to do it, and it was something that I saw, and when I saw it, I thought, well, I'm going to go to this class because I haven't decided whether or not I wanted to do it. And when I got there, that was when I made the decision that this was right for me, and the information that was given at these classes was a great start to allow me to develop what I needed to develop to become a beginner beekeeper.
So it's not going to be everything, but it's going to get you started. And this is a good time of year to start because I imagine that the spring is when a lot of new people start because then you get some excitement out of it. If you start being a beekeeper in November, they're all asleep, right? Or pretty much. I mean, they're not buzzing around too much in November, December, and January.
Well, you have to start a hive in the spring because that's when the pollen and the nectar are available for the bees to build up.
They're going to be very skinny bees.
Yes.
Yeah, if you start your hive in
yes.
November, very, very skinny bees. So
well, they need to build up their reserves during the summer to live through the winter. They require a lot of honey and pollen to make it through the cold winters that we have here.
Now let's talk about the honey, because a lot of people say the number one reason to keep bees is to help pollinate things I already have in my area and for the honey. You do have to leave some for the bees, right? You can't take it all, right? And so, you know, that's what the bees are. They're not making it just so Josh Ingram can have the honey on his cereal in the morning. They're making it for themselves, and you're just stealing some of it.
And you're robbing
it. Robbing it from them. So, but what's the primary motivator for people to keep bees? Is it they want honey? Josh, what was your primary motivator?
So, this is something I've wanted to do for the last decade. And
because?
I found it interesting. I mean, you hear the buzzword, the colony collapse disorder started in 2000s. And so you started seeing a lot of documentaries and a lot of things on TV and online and in magazines, and it became very interesting to me. But not only because of that, it's because of the challenge. It is something that one thing I learned from one of our members who's also an Illinois state inspector, which is a benefit of our club that we have a state inspector in our club. He said some very, very good words that I live by, which is, I don't want you to be a bee haver. I want you to be a bee keeper. And I took that and ran with it. So the main motivation for me, yes, was because it's just fascinating to me to watch this society live in my backyard.
Okay. And are there restrictions? I mean, obviously you can't have 15 hives in one backyard or something like that, but are there restrictions on where you can have a beehive in the city limits, outside the city limits, how many you can have per square, whatever?
It depends on the community. Some do allow bees in the city limits.
Okay,
others
Quincy,
don't.
Can you do it in Quincy?
Yeah, I'm in the city limits, and we're allowed.
As far as the numbers you can have in any one location, that can vary depending on what kind of forage is available for them to feed on. If there's lots of it out there, you can have 8, 10, 12 hives in a location, or even more. You just have to kind of get a sense of what's out there and how many bees that can support. Now, the bees will fly out 3 miles from their hive to find food, so they can cover quite a range.
So it's not up to you to have the hive for the whole world, just for the 3 mile radius that the bees will fly. And the bees will also tell you, I mean, when they have such plentiful food that they've got more than they need, then another queen will emerge and she'll start her own little thing, I guess, maybe with or without your help. So you'll know after you've been doing this for a while if your bees have enough to eat. And the primary purpose, like you said, you like the society aspect of it, the queen and all her drones and her workers and getting the honey, of course, is interesting, too. But there's also an agricultural and pollinator. We are losing our pollinators. And even people who have backyard gardening, they're having trouble with pollination of some of their vegetable and flower plants because of a loss of the hummingbirds, the butterflies, the bees. So is it important, Bruce, that we get people trained to have their own little backyard beehive?
Sure. The more bees we have around, the better off we are. The more pollinators we have, the better off we are. I heard a figure this morning that there are about 3/4 of our plants require pollinators to reproduce. And so without them, we lose an awful lot of our flora that's out there.
So one thing I think would be a deterrent for people maybe in town, they would say, okay, well, I can have it in my backyard, but what if kids come by and get stung, or what if my neighbor's dog gets stung? How often do bees come out of the hive and sting people?
Do you want me to field that one since I'm in town? Sure. Okay, so I live inside the city limits, and I have them in my backyard. And I was a little concerned about that because, of course, I didn't want anyone else to get hurt or anything else to get hurt. So I made sure and did my due diligence. I looked at our local ordinances, and our ordinances do not restrict people from having beehives in the city limits, which was great for me when I found that out because that then allowed me to try this hobby. The thing is that, like with anything else in nature, you know, we have other animals that sting. We have mosquitoes, we have buffalo gnats, we have other wasps that people get stung with. The honeybee, from what I've read and my experience, is a less aggressive species of bee than, say, an Africanized bee,
right,
which we don't have in this area because of the climate. And it was, it's been, I haven't had any problems. I go out on my backyard and I look from my deck and I watch my three hives. I watch bees go in and out and sometimes they'll land on the deck. I've not had any of my neighbors stung. I've not had any of my dogs stung. I have not had my kids haven't been stung, and my wife hasn't been stung. So it's
perfectly safe to have in your backyard.
Perfect.
I mean, if somebody takes a baseball bat and hits it, they're kind of an idiot. but, you know, I mean, again, barring something really weird happening, it's just like having a dog.
I mean,
the dog could bite your neighbor's kid if the neighbor's kid comes in the yard and hits the dog with a baseball bat. Yeah.
And there's the other thing is that you can put a fence around those hives, and that will force the bees to fly up, and their flight pattern is up instead of out away from the hive, which keeps people out of that flight path even more. So there are ways of minimizing the chances. Can't eliminate it, and there are people that are susceptible and react to bee stings in a very strong way, and so. You know, we do need to be aware of that and be conscious of that.
Be a good neighbor, but having bees in your backyard is perfectly, perfectly okay. Tomorrow, there is a beekeeping class. Josh took this, and now he's got three hives, and it's from 8:30 to 4:30 at the Adams County Farm Bureau Building, 330 South 36th Street in Quincy. Registration begins at 8. The great thing about it is it's $35, but the whole family can come for that, and this is something really that kids can be involved in and can enjoy.
And I might add, too, that if you can't make tomorrow, we do have a second class on March 7th, same hours, same location, same price.
Okay, so get yourself out to the Adams County Farm Bureau. Can you just sign up tomorrow, just show up tomorrow?
Yes.
Okay, $35 for a whole family or a couple or whoever wants to come, individuals or families, $35. They'll teach you how to get started in being a beekeeper, and then all the honey you can eat after that. Thank you so much for coming by. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.